Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. In Northumberland, everyone is a bit different when it comes to strong mayor powers. In Trent Hills, Bob Crate is giving them up, sticking with current practices. Port Hope Mayor Elena Hankvinsky has taken a similar path. Brighton Mayor Brian Ostrander is taking a mixed bag, delegating some powers while keeping a few others, confident that he and council can meet provincial priorities without them. On today's show, Cobourg Mayor Lucas Cleveland weighs in. He will speak to his interpretation of the legislation. He will also detail a plan to create a budget task force made up of local citizens. They will come up with their own version as part of the drafting process. You will want to hear some of his other ideas.
I am absolutely delighted to have back with me today Cobourg Mayor Lucas Cleveland. Welcome back to Consider This Northumberland.
Thanks, Robert. Happy to be back. It's been a bit of a time, but excited to go forward and have some questions and answers and have some conversation.
On May 1st, your strong mayor powers kicked in. Have you had any reason to exercise your new abilities to date, yes or no?
No, I have not chosen to use the strong mayor powers to date.
If you were to meet somebody on the street then, and they asked you to explain what are strong mayor powers, what would you say to them?
I would say that the strong mayor powers are a tool that has been created by the province that in their opinion will help to move provincial priorities along in an attempt to, what do I say, unpack the stagnant councils of some communities. I would say that it is a change, a massive change in the structure of municipal governments. And I would say that it more resembles something to the effect of like an American style system where you have sort of a separation of the head and the council. Yet it's also a mixed bag of that approach with the Canadian approach of sort of collaboration and consensus building.
You mentioned stagnant councils. Do you count Cobourg among those?
Definitely not. I would consider Cobourg one of the most forward-leaning, fastest moving and quick to pivot councils over the last 2.5 years. I mean, I can go through at length to describe some of that from our governance review to a strategic plan, but no, I don't consider the Cobourg Council a stagnant council in any way, shape, or form. I think 2.5 years have shown collaboration at its finest.
What then are the most notable aspects of these powers in your mind?
I mean, the whole legislation is pretty interesting when you actually look at it here, Robert. It's an interesting mixed bag and an interesting approach. What I would say the biggest changes are, of course, the vetoing of the ability of a mayor to veto. When you look at the actual mathematical changes, I would say that really it goes from a consensus of 4 to a consensus of 3 now is really the issue. Because even if a mayor chooses to veto, and let's just use Cobourg as an example with the 7 members, it still requires 2 members of that council to agree with the mayor's veto to not be able to overturn it, because 2/3 of a majority council can always overturn a strong mayor decision. And so while a lot of people see it as a dictatorial power, the reality is that it isn't, in a sense. Like, it's not like sort of the American style where once it's issued, it's done. It does allow the opportunity for the mayor to veto a decision of council should they choose to, but it doesn't stand unless at least 2 members of the council support the mayor's veto, because they can always go back and forth. So in a sense, there's an attempt by the province to sort of move decisions along, but at the same time, it could actually result in a bit of a more back and forth between council and the head of council. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I've been sort of paying attention around, and it's interesting how different councils and different mayors are handling it.
The big emphasis of these powers is to fast-track housing development. Mm-hmm. When you are interpreting this mandate, what do you understand it to be?
Well, that's a great question, Robert. I think that's one of the interesting things about this legislation, is that it is really up to the mayor themselves to decide, in a sense, what does and doesn't fall under this legislation. That if the mayor can make a case that a decision in one way or another affects development or a provincial priority, that they then can make use of strong mayor powers. I noticed, I've been attending a few different sessions, the AMO sessions on strong mayor, and I've been working with sort of our legal team here, because like there's a lot of unknowns. Look at a lame duck council, it usually sits around May 10th of the election year. Does lame duck happen under strong mayor powers? Does the strong mayor become lame duck? So these are some like real nitty gritty policy questions. And so your question sort of was, what is the biggest part of it? I would say the change of the veto would be one, and the second would be the budget, sir.
All right. But going back to the housing, fast-tracking of housing development, how would you implement that aspect?
I believe we've done some of that already as a council in terms of looking at our planning processes, looking at different types of grants. I think the public can be rest assured that prior to summer break, I'm going to be probably bringing a few suggestions to council, not using strong mayor necessarily, to simply, we know the province is potentially looking at DCs, which I do not agree with cutting or separating of DCs. So
What's the DC just for?
Sorry, yeah, development charges. So we know there's a lot of talk. We also know in Ontario that there's a lot of houses. So just an example in Cobourg, there's just shy of 600 houses that are already pre-approved that permits haven't been pulled on yet. And so we're looking at how we can incentivize builders to get back to building without a few of factors. One factor being severe staff time. So a lot of CIP grants require staff to review, to streamline, to pick and choose. I'm looking hopefully to introduce through regular council some opportunities for council to maybe look at ways to incentivize development that doesn't take away from our fiscal responsibilities long-term with DCs, with savings, with reserves. You have to make sure, from my perspective as a leader, that when you're making decisions like this, that while we have short-term problems to address, that we're not creating bigger long-term problems in addressing those short-term. And so I disagree fundamentally with the potentially the axing, if you will, of what some other mayors have done on DCs to spur development. And so I'm looking right now, there's no point in reinventing the wheel on this one, Robert, whether it's the Brownfield redevelopment program that's been launched in Peterborough, whether they're doing some interesting work out in London around the deferral of property tax increase over a 5 to 10 year period. These are development incentivizations that don't require budget dollars and are only taking a break from the time that that revenue would hit our revenue stream. So you asked how I would do it. I'm looking to potentially introduce some to council in June. We'll see how that goes.
Well, I understand what you've said. I was thinking more of recently, we've watched two major issues arrive that involve development. The first one is Strathmore House on the former Brookside property. Now, are you prepared to use your strong mayor powers to ensure the timely development over those lands? Because you were pretty vocal at a recent council meeting, warning council and the audience about the Ontario government and its response to the decision that night. So are
warning
you,
is a strong word.
I don't think it is. I think you were delivering a very direct message. And are you concerned sufficiently to be proactive rather than wait for the province to respond, because it may send the wrong message to the province?
Listen, I'm not really concerned about the message I do or don't send to the province. Between you and I, Robert, I wasn't elected by the province. I wasn't elected by anyone else other than Cobourg residents. And it's Cobourg residents that I primarily serve in my primary role as mayor of Cobourg. So your question is regarding sort of the Strathmore House. And I think that's a great opportunity to discuss solutions versus process. I think we all agree that there is some historical significance to Strathmore House. Since day one, I've been very vocal about the support of our heritage in this community. It's one of the reasons I moved here 9 years ago. What a cool historical, preserved downtown and community. So heritage is exceptionally important to this community and to me. I've been also very vocal about the checkered past of the Strathmore House. I've asked questions, people thinking that I'm not in favor of heritage just because I'm asking about, do all institutions require preservation, even ones that are known to have had some serious issues in the past that we've seen W5 documentary series on? Like, we don't see a move for towns to protect residential schools. We don't see moves from communities to protect other buildings where children were abused and untold atrocities committed. So leaving that whole factor of Strathmore House aside, I can understand that some community members see some value in the preservation of the heritage building. And so when we, staff and I, started having conversations early on with the developer, that was made very clear that it would be best to find a way to protect the historical significance of Strathmore. And so the reality is that was what the staff did. And for the first time in a long time, we have a staff who are focused on results and focused on getting those results, not focusing on the processes that are often the exact things that get in the way of those results. And so the staff knew we needed to save this building. We knew that doing so costs millions of dollars. And so we kind of went to the developer and said, hey, is this possible? How is it possible? And what's your vision? And so that was a great recommendation, in my opinion, of a middle ground where we find the way to save the building and allow the developer to develop effectively. And my quote unquote warning, as you suggested, was that it doesn't make financial sense for a lot of developers to save these buildings. And so we found a way to potentially compromise to make it financially able to be saved. And again, that black and white thinking of save it or don't save it may end up with the exact opposite result of what we all wanted to see. So that was the warning, so to speak, was that, guys, we all want the same thing. I just disagree with this is the way to get it done.
All right. So with all that in that context, then, is this an example of when strong mayor powers might be used to achieve the goal that you just set out that you believe is the best path forward? That's what I'm trying to get at, because we're talking about strong mayor.
Yeah, fair enough. So no, I don't believe it's again, I am one member of council. I don't see the necessity to speed this up. If the 150 to 300 members of the community believe fundamentally that this is the best way to preserve the house, well, my belief that it isn't is just that. I had to make it public. I had to make a statement, but no, sir, I haven't exercised the strong mayors. Do I have any sort of necessity to do so at this date? I have faith in the public and my council and the decision-making process. And my opportunity was that to simply make a prediction. Again, I hope I'm wrong, and I hope that the developer doesn't challenge at the OLT, and I hope that we're not wasting tens and hundreds of thousands of staff dollars on this project. Unfortunately, when you look at the facts, that's probably what's going to happen to no avail. And, it is what it is.
Well, I guess the second case then that I wanted to talk to you about was 117 Durham Street, the former West Collegiate playing field. Now, this one's a bit more complex, and I realize that this is on a potential sale of lands under the asset management plan, and we'll talk about that later. But for now, I would like to know, in terms of the potential for development, would you use your strong mayor powers to expedite building on these lands? Why or why not?
Of course I wouldn't, Robert. I don't believe that that's the desire to move strong mayor powers in that direction. I don't see the need at this point. The reality is when things change, when you have huge structural changes, I think it's a fool's errand to run out and to immediately start using those tools without sort of properly thinking it through. To understand that they're, again, we just talked about, you don't want to be making short-term decisions for long-term pain. And while, say, a strong mayor decision to go against council may have helped get us a few $100,000 more in the disposition of that land through a rezone, the reality is the council motion to move towards the sale has never been changed. That's the sad part. Again, it's very similar to the previous. We have the same goal, and we're disagreeing on the process. And that's okay. But again, it's interesting to me because here we have an elected group of individuals at Coburg Council who understand the process, who, as we're going to talk about later, understand the financial situation Coburg's in. And we haven't changed the motion to sell the property. All that was defeated was the rezoning. And why did we want to rezone it? Well, let's ask about that. We wanted to rezone it to a potential three-story building within the current OP. So we're not talking some, like the stories were being told of 10 tower. We were looking at a maximum of a three-story building with a certain density that currently matches the surrounding community. And the reason we were looking to do that makes logical sense. In the disposition of this property, we want to maximize return dollars for the tax base. Well, a zoned property will garner significant more resources than an unzoned property. And again, so here we are, and again, the council unanimously, or yeah, I believe unanimously decided to not rezone it. But that was just one decision in a process to, and as we'll talk about later, this isn't necessarily going to be a strong Mayor Lucas decision. It's going to be a financial decision at the end of the day that this council is most likely going to be making.
You mentioned earlier, one of the things that caught your eye was the ability for the mayor to create an initial town budget, a draft, mm-hmm. without any council involvement or any discussion purposes. In terms of drafting a budget right now, how much are councillors involved with that first draft?
Oh, well, that's an interesting one. So I can't speak to the way budgets were done previous. The way council used to do it was like a budget chair, and they would go line by line through all the processes and go looking at this example and this example. And I would say that was a big shift in this council, in this leadership of this council already that happened. And what I mean by that is we no longer went through that process. We actually relooked at a new budget process where the entire council looks at each department after the staff have generated a budget. And so what happened is we saw some preliminary council meetings, some early talk of council with directors. But the other thing that I think is important, and then that director's team would go away, prepare a draft budget, and then we would schedule budget meetings where we would go over each individual department, sort of line by line with directors. I would usually be me and the deputy mayor going through all of that. And then we would, as a council, get together and discuss large topic, high topic items. But again, that line by line, the reality is we are elected policy leaders. We are elected guidance in the sense that we direct through policy and not through operations.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, then you're saying to me right now that you're not interested in drafting an initial town budget. You're going to stick with your current process.
No, you're definitely not hearing. What you're hearing is the way it was before.
I see.
And I just wanted to contrast that to this.
Okay.
So right now I'm in early discussions with what we're going to be doing this year. It might be a little early to sort of let the cat out of the bag, but I can lead you to some of the things I'm thinking about. I believe that there is a big discrepancy between what the budgeting process is in a municipality and what the public perception of budgeting for a municipality involves. I think there is a lack of, I know I didn't have this information before becoming mayor, so I'm assuming that off my own ignorance on this process. Maybe there are other municipal political people who know the nitty-gritties of municipal budgeting, but that wasn't me. So I only share this sort of surprise out of my own experience. People don't often realize that 80% of our budgets are predetermined, upwards of over 80% actually, through commitments in the Municipal Act, shared costing agreements, union requirements, position mandates, required raises. So the actual amount that a council gets to control is actually very limited in terms of the size of the budget. And this goes both at the lower tier and at the upper tier, just different responsibilities. So I think one of the things I'm going to be looking at doing in this budget cycle is, I don't want to say delegating, because delegating under strong mayors doesn't really work, and I'm sure we'll talk about that later, but empowering community outside of council and staff. Empowering community input outside of a survey that they click on, bringing individual members of the community at large in Coburg into a room with a consultant separate from town staff and separate from political staff to actually work through what budgeting and what decisions are possible, to hear from community members in a safe environment where they would make some of the very difficult choices that we as a council need to address. And those choices we're going to talk about, I'm assuming, as we move forward. But in the context of the strong mayor power, I'm looking to see, as the mayor, we staff are going to produce a budget. They're going to work through it. I've already talked to my direct treasurer to go through the normal steps of reaching out to all your different departments, start understanding what they need, what they want, categorize high-end needs, low-end needs, as we would do with any normal budget process. And then I'm looking at using strong mayor powers on the other side to bring community members in for twofold. One, I want to know what their ideas are. I want to hear fresh ideas, fresh eyes, people from outside the system who become educated as to what is actually allowed and not allowed to be done, to then see the sort of the difficult decisions we have and see what members of the public would do in these difficult choices. I'm not saying I'm going to do everything the public says, but it would be really good to see what the average public, more importantly, it's going to create a group of 10, 12, 14 members of whoever's in that group to be advocates in the community. What do I mean by advocates? Well, how do we get a lot of our media now, Mr. Washburn? We get it through social media. We get it through these Facebook groups. We get it through these posts. And as much as I want to post, or the comms from Coburg want to post about the realities of budgeting and the realities, it means a lot more coming from community members who have themselves experienced, learned, and worked through these kind of difficult questions. More importantly, I think it's great to put some very diverse perspectives around the community in a room together, because I think that will really help them to understand that in order to give one, you tend to be taking away from another. And so it's great to, you know, when you're a member of the Coburg tax base and you're fighting for zero tax percent increases and a reduction in staff, well, maybe you don't use public transport. Maybe you don't value a particular service. And having them in the echo chambers that currently exist on social media tend not to see, understand, or hear the varied perspectives. This putting in an actual physical room, a group of influential, intelligent, sort of invested community members might create some of that dialogue both in that room and on the social spheres that will continue the attempt I have started since day one of engaging this community, because complaining is addictive. And I'm trying to get members in the community to understand that these decisions and these opportunities are within your control, but you won't affect anyone if you simply write your complaints on social media, that you have to take steps to actually see change.
All right. So if I'm hearing this correctly, then did you suggest then that one, you're going to use your strong mayor powers to create an initial draft budget, and two, that you're going to use your strong mayor powers to create a committee or task force to create that initial budget that is going to come in and be part of a broader budget process? Did I hear that?
You heard it correctly, but I just want to say I'm not going to exercise my strong mayor powers. Those are the powers that are already there, and that is the process by which the government of Ontario has allocated that process. It's not that I'm choosing. The province of Ontario said this is the way the budget's going to work now. Now, I can pretend like that's not going to happen, and I can say, no, we're not going to do it this way, but I'm not making any changes to the budget process. All I'm doing is simply bringing in a potential for that, so that when the budget is prepared by staff and I to come to the full council, it will be done so with more community engagement.
So if council decides that this process that you're proposing is not suitable, then you'll just go with that and you won't invoke any of these strong.
You're asking me to crystal ball it at this point. I would be surprised that any council would not want a budget process that involves more community involvement. I would be shocked to see a council say, no, mayor, we want you to use your strong mayor powers and do it yourself, or we want to have all the say. When I'm using the strong mayor powers to include the community, I can't think of a better use of strong mayor powers. Using the strong mayor powers to open a system up to the public to get more engagement, I mean, is there a better use of strong mayor powers?
Okay, so you've got me a bit confused then, because you just invoked saying if I would use these strong mayor powers and this is the way it would go. And then you just said, but no, it's not. So which is it?
What do you mean by that?
I'm just trying to get clear in my own head. You were just alluding to the fact that these are strong mayor powers that you could use to create an initial draft budget and to create a committee or a task force. That's part of what the government outlined. So I'm just saying that, is that the case, or are you going to go to council? Council, for whatever reason, we don't know, you said it yourself, we're gazing into a crystal ball, but if they said, no, would you invoke, because you believe so much in your idea, would you invoke the strong mayor powers to achieve this plan that you have?
I guess that really depends on what the response is from the council, Robert. Again, I can't crystal ball it.
Nope.
And to be honest, truth is again, this whole invoking of powers, I just want to be very clear. There are powers that have been granted by the province to mayors.
Yes.
And no abdication of those prevents the mayor from then using them the very next day. The reality is you're hearing a lot of mayors say, well, I am delegating this to so-and-so, and I'm delegating to this,
yes,
which is lovely to say, but there is no delegation. And what I mean by that is all that is the mayor choosing not on that day to use their power. But they would not need to give notice. They do not need to announce that they are now going back on the previous decision to take those powers back. There would be no need to publicly announce, I'm not going to delegate these anymore. And at any day, at any time, no matter the delegation that has been given by any mayor, if the next day they wake up and decide they want that to use that power, they can use it. And I think that's really important to understand, because there is no delegating provincial powers. There could be a choice from some mayors not to exercise their ability to use those powers. But in terms of delegating, because a mayor says, well, I'm delegating that to the CAO, that's great until the very day they don't want that CAO to have those powers, and they can just decide to use them anyways. And so I think that's really important for the general public to understand. It's a bit of a political posturing, the reality. And that's why I haven't embarked on that. I said very clearly, this is a new power. I was honored to be given it by the province, and I will use it judiciously. And that's the authentic truth. The idea that I can abdicate powers to anyone, sure, I can make a political statement going, I'm doing this. But if any other day I chose not to do that, then there's no need to revoke them back to me. And I think that's a really important point, because you can't get rid of the things the province does.
You say you're not going to delegate, and you could wake up one morning and you're
going
to invoke, you could vote for, well, we're talking about you. You could invoke strong mayor powers. And what I'm trying to determine right now, which is a very serious topic, and I'm not messing around, is that when are you going to do that? And under what circumstances?
You're asking me to crystal ball it, and I'm not going to play this game, Robert. It's no different than the people asking me at the beginning of the election when I ran, what are your plans, Mayor? What are you going to do every day in office? What do you mean? I've never been mayor before. And so I told everyone with integrity and authenticity, I don't know what I'm going to do with them, because I can't predict the future or the problems. And because I'd never been mayor before, it would be 100% inauthentic to make promises that I have no idea I can and can't keep. Now you're asking me once again, well, what are you going to do with these powers? I don't know. I can tell you I'm going to use them judiciously, and I can tell you I'm going to use them only absolutely necessary. And now you're going to say, well, what's absolutely necessary? When that moment comes along, you'll know, because I will exercise the powers. And it's not about uncertainty. And this narrative that you're building, that this is creating uncertainty, then take that up with the province, sir. Then take that up with Minister Pacini and get him on the show and ask him those questions, because these are the people that made this decision. And yet you're still coming at me going, well, this seems... No, the province, which I'm a creature of, made a decision. Like it or not, that's the choice. And this was bestowed upon me. I didn't choose, I didn't ask for it, and I sure as heck didn't need it.
There are critics, though, including the Association of Municipal Managers, Clerks, and Treasurers, that say this aspect of strong mayor powers, which deals with the hiring and firing of town managers, is something that worries them a great deal. And it could lead to more partisan politics rather than evidence-based advice. What do you say to that?
I say that's an interesting opinion. I would say that change is always hard. And I would say that now that there are more than half of the municipalities in Ontario operating under the strong mayor's framework, it seems like it's going to be continuing as the status quo for a while. And so while a lot of people are spending time concerning themselves with what should be or isn't, I'm focused on moving forward with the reality as is. I don't see the necessity to complain or waste the little time I have left in office contemplating what could or should have been. Instead, We move forward. We accept that change is always difficult, but necessary, and that no matter what change is made, you'll always have people saying that this is not the right change.
In the letter sent out by Minister of Municipal Affairs and Housing, Rob Flack, explaining the decision to give powers, it mentions the use of powers to address, and I'm quoting here, other provincial priorities. What does that phrase mean to you?
I would say that the priorities of the province as they come out. Again, good question from Minister Flack.
Okay. Can you provide some examples that you think might represent provincial priorities? I'm just wondering, for example, a good one might be the supervised consumption sites, and the government wants to replace them with homeless and addiction recovery treatment centers to shelter and employ rehabilitated drug users.
Okay.
Now, the town is actively managing 310 Division Street through its emergency care bylaw, and you've got a request to have a report done looking at changing it to a sober living facility rather than a low barrier shelter. Now, I realize this straddles two levels of municipal powers, but in the case of Coburg, end of this issue, how ready are you to use strong mayor powers to make changes to this operation as it potentially falls under the provincial government's priority to create recovery treatment facilities? That's what I'm talking about.
Understood. So you want to know if I'm going to use strong mayor powers around 310 is the direct question?
Yeah.
No. And I just want to be very careful. I'm not here to philosophize about what the province is and isn't going to make their priority. Again, I'm going to work within the confines of the role I've been elected to do the best I can within those parameters. I don't even speak for the County of Northumberland, so I'm sure as heck not going to start speaking for the province of Ontario.
There are critics of strong mayor powers who say it's anti-democratic, and you've talked about this a little bit before. Mm-hmm. How do you respond to those critics?
The same way I responded to your question, sir. If you have issues with legislation passed by the province, I highly recommend that you take that up with your MPP or the province themselves, as these are decisions made outside of our ability to really effectively make any decisions. And so if they choose to take issues with the provincial priorities, as we've seen around several bills being introduced today, I would encourage them to do that around the strong mayor's power. Again, this is not a decision I had. This is not a choice I made. This is a power that was bestowed by the province. And should members of the public have an issue with that, I encourage them to take that up with the province who made that decision to do this.
Are you concerned that any decisions that council makes going forward, where it does not align with the provincial priorities, that the town will lose out on provincial funding?
I don't know if that's a concern I have moving forward. I would believe that should every municipality should have a concern with that. Because the reality is we are creatures of the province. It's a limited pot of resources out there, ladies and gentlemen. And I would say success of aligning yourself with provincial priorities is proven. $30 million in 1 year, this level of government received. Literally doubling the budget of Coburg with $30 million worth of grants. And we did it not by selling our souls. We did it by looking for effective, efficient ways of moving forward, finding priorities that are both Coburg's and the province's, and focusing on those. There are lots of provincial priorities that would not serve Coburg. We don't have to be aligned with every provincial priority, but it's a really good idea as children of the province. So when you got parents, it's usually a good idea to follow the rules of the parents of the house you live in. Why? Because you tend to get to go on a few more vacations. And the reality here is the same. Whether you're saying, are you worried moving forward? No, this is the way it works. And again, we can go back and forth here, Mr. Washburn, for hours about what the way the world should work. We can talk about the way we'd like the world to work, but the way the world works is the way the world works. And this is a reality. And it's not just a provincial government. If you're not in line with the federal priorities, you don't get any federal money. So this is the way government works. Government has a limited window of 4 years, either provincial or federal, to make significant changes. And one of the ways they incentivize other levels of government to come along with those changes is through rewarding those that do. It's no different than the feds rewarding the different provinces that get on board with different projects. And so here we are once again with the province doing the same to municipalities, and I don't worry about it. I accept it as a reality. I accept that council may make decisions in the next year or two that are antithetical to provincial priorities. And in doing so, they may hurt future grant proposals. But that is the way the world works, and we will adjust accordingly as we move forward.
So what is the great advantage to strong mayor powers then in your mind?
I don't know if there is one right now, Robert. As I said, it's too soon to tell. I've seen examples in other jurisdictions where there's been mayors who've used them 40 and 50 times in the first 6 months. I've seen some good decisions, some bad. I've seen other mayors who have outright shamed the province for giving it to them. I think there's a balance in the middle somewhere. I'm looking forward to the next sort of 15, 16 months of this term as I learn maybe where an opportunity to use them that makes sense is. Maybe there isn't one that presents itself in the next little bit. As I said, let's talk about the work that's been done. We were able to get $30 million in provincial funding without strong mayor powers. We were able to move development faster than we ever have without strong mayor powers. We were able to get an operational plan and a strategic plan that is actually useful without strong mayor powers. So I believe council's shown that despite our maybe political ideological differences and our varied backgrounds, that we're pretty aligned with what's important to Coburg.
Let's talk about the asset management financial stability plan.
By all means.
The asset management plan is required by every municipality. This is where the town lists all its assets like roads and sewers and vehicles and buildings and harbor walls, you name it. Look at how long it looks at how long these are all going to last, and then what's the upkeep and then the replacement costs. And, you know, we all understand that roads will be different than sewage treatment plants. Now, a consultant presented a report to council that recently indicated a shortfall. Can you explain to the listeners what's going on there?
Which report and which shortfall, Robert? I guess maybe
specificity. First one I noticed was a shortfall of budgeted capital funding for 2025 of $5.4 million. And then there's the annual life cycle funding requirement for $12.8 million. Those were the two that I saw.
Yeah, there's several different ones. So what we're looking at here is something that we've been working on 2 years, I'll suggest. And that's to have an actual image and clear 3D modeling of where we currently stand financially. So one of the problems when I first came to office was I couldn't get a read as a numbers guy and as a guy who's worked budgets in private enterprise. I couldn't really understand where we stood. Where were our reserves at? How much room did we have? Where was our debt capital? Again, I'm not new to finances or financials. And so I had some questions. And so this is the culmination of 2 years of work. This is a culmination of deep dives, of figuring out what is and isn't been accounted for, what capital has been financed, what hasn't, where are reserves at. So this is a lot of work to get to where we're at. So the reason I asked which report and which shortfall is what we're finding out here is that the cat's a bit out of the bag, Robert. For the last 3 years, I've been crying for infrastructure savings, 3% in year one, 3% in year two, and I only got 1% here in the last year. We've already been 7 or 8% ahead of the game had those passed, but here we are now, and I look forward to making these changes. But the reality is we have a big elephant to eat here, and the two you're pointing out are just two bites of that elephant. What I would turn to is more the Treasurer Sustainability Report, which takes into account the report you're speaking to. I think that's a more holistic in a way that we can stay out of the nitty-gritty with limited time. And what we're talking about is the Treasurer Sustainability Report really informed us that historically, Coburg has been underfunding its reserves consistently for years, and that we've been offsetting operational costs using either the Northern Budget or our police fund, and it's been inadequately saving for asset life cycle costs and renewals. This is just the reality of the situation. And there's no point in pointing blame or in looking at other things, but the reality is this is the situation that I and this council no longer can kick down the path. We can no longer pretend we don't know. We can no longer pretend that there's not a significant and serious issue in Coburg regarding haves, needs, and wants. We can no longer avoid the conversation of what are we going to focus on and what are we going to give up in order to focus on that. We just had this conversation literally 2 hours ago at the county, sir. You want to talk about tax levies. You know, they have 6% coming just from GPL. They have 7% from this, 8% from this. So we now at the county have to have some significant conversations about what aren't we going to be doing. And these are conversations that, in my opinion, have been kicked down the road upwards of a decade from multiple levels of government because of the re-election cycle. we can't do that anymore. And so what we have to start doing is understanding how much we're going to take a bite out of it, how soon, and what programs and services we're going to have to start looking at reducing, because the average taxpayer can't continue 8 to 12% tax increases year after year. With the downloading of costs, this is a reality. We can't adjust or fix the downloading of costs from federal to provincial to local. We can advocate against it, but again, advocacy is one part, dealing with the reality is another.
So to deal with this reality, it was a little confusing, and maybe you can clarify for me, but if you were just to hike the taxes to make up this difference, how much would we be looking at in a year?
That's a nasty question. Ballparking, probably 20, 25%. Wow. When you take into a consideration of all, now that's, again, no one's suggesting that. I want to be very clear. No one is ever suggesting we're going to go taxes. So what you do is you would spread it out over a period of time. I don't even agree with that. I don't agree that we should even be taking that kind of a hike and assuming it over a 15 years, because that's assuming that nothing else is going to catch us off guard in the next 15 years. It's assuming we're not going to go into a massive recession. That's assuming. So I would say it's going to be a combination of approaches. One of the reasons I want to bring in a community-led task force is to look at these exact situations. Because it's great that the community is going to say, we want 0% tax increase. Well, I want that task force to see what that means. I want them to understand that a 0% tax increase means we have to find 15% savings in our budget. That means we have to drop 15% of our current service model. And so we're going to see a bit of a mixed bag, I think, as we move forward in budgets, looking at short-term solutions, long-term solutions, asset sales, reduction or lowering of standards of service.
All right. So just to be clear, because you mentioned a couple of things there. So one is the taxes. That's one tool you have in your toolbox. The second one you said is a reduction in services. And then a third was the selling of town assets. Did I get that right?
Yeah, there's a variety. And as I said, we're starting to, I'm really going into working with some consultants right now about how other municipalities outside of Ontario, because this can't just be an Ontario search. We really have to look far and wide to see creative out-of-the-box solutions. I mean, I knew in year one and year two, when we weren't able to get that 3% infrastructure levy started, that something was going to come when we got into the bottom of this, which is why, since I was able to do that, I really sort of hammered down and focused on grant funding, because that's one tool that we can offset capital costs landing on the budgets by finding huge grants. So knowing that I couldn't necessarily have the conversation in year one and year two about this, because we're still pulling all the information together, how can you work on other means to get to the same solution of financial sustainability, which is why we're very proud to say $30 million in 2024. We're working diligently in 2025 to start landing up grants as well, because that has to play part as sort of the potpourri, if you will, of solutions. We need to stop spending all the money here. We need to raise some taxes here. We need to look at reallocation of assets and reserves. And we have to keep going after these grant dollars. We're seeing a provincial and a federal government who are incentivizing buying Canada, who are incentivizing development, who have money on the table, but they only have money on the table for those corporations, towns, municipalities, and regions who are moving in lockstep with their priorities and who are actively engaged in those priorities. They don't want plans. They don't want ideas. They want to see communities moving on plans, and then they show up with the funding at that point.
Mayor Lucas Cleveland, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
As always, Robert, pleasure.
That was Cobourg Mayor Lucas Cleveland. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.